Welcome. This is Research Break, brought to you by Research Ranker Pete. I am co-host Alyssa, and today co-host Hannah is taking an extra break. You know, she heard about this research break and she went, I'm out. So I brought along a guest host. Guest host, would you like to introduce yourself?
Of course. Hi, this is Dr. Tara Hollies coming back to the show. Yes, golf clap. Everyone's yes. Cheering in the audience.
Yeah. I'll add I'm in some applause.
Okay. I'm a cousin of Alyssa and Hannah. So obviously big fan of this show and big fan of True Detective. So that's why I'm here.
That's why I brought her on. So if you didn't listen to our Step Up episode back in, I think it was 2021 is when we did that. It was a long time ago. You came on and we ranked all the Step Up movies, which was a lovely time. And then when I heard True Detective, which is what we're going to be talking about, had a fourth season coming out, I was like, all right, I want to talk about it. And the only person I know who will talk about it with me is Tara. So I asked Hannah, I ran it by her. I said, how do you feel about me doing an episode without you? And I told her what it was. And she said, yeah, that's fine. Two things about Hannah that you may already know. We may have already covered this, but Hannah does not like scary, suspenseful things. And she also does not like Jodie Foster for reasons unknown. Something about a movie called Nell. I don't know. She didn't like the movie. She doesn't like Jodie Foster. I think an unreasonable hatred is in order, but.
Yeah, she's a little biased.
A little biased. We did try to watch, I think you and I watched Silence of the Lambs once because I had already seen it.
Yep.
And Hannah, I think, watched about 5 minutes and then said, sorry, I gotta go. I can't do it.
I don't even think it was 5 minutes. I don't even think it was that
very
long.
She's small like, I can't do this. She's like, I can't do it. But yeah, so today we're here to talk about True Detective Night Country, which is the fourth season. Okay, there we go. I was like, I wanted to say episode, but I'm like, series, season. I was like, what's the right word? Season. Fourth season of this series. There we go. The S's came together. And so Tara and I are no strangers to True Detective. One fateful day, like, I don't know, 8 years ago or something, I got this DVD set for True Detective Season 1. I was reading about it online, and I was like, it sounds really cool. And per usual, I was sailing the high seas, and I did not have a HBO subscription. I don't even think, to be honest, I don't even think like an online streaming existed for HBO at this point.
No.
Or it was very bare bones, because I know like at some point you were able to do Game of Thrones like through like HBO Now or something. It was like some other app if you didn't have actual HBO. But I got the DVD, and then I think we were living together when I was in college and you were in second college to become a doctor.
Yes.
Grad school. And I think I was like, hey, you want to watch this? Because we both like that kind of, like, into, like, true crime and, like, that type of vibe. And you said, yeah. And we sat down. And it was incredible. And we were blown away. And we were like, oh, my God, this is amazing.
Yes. And the final episode of season one, we were screaming the whole time. We were
screaming.
Shrieking, and we were, like, shaking. And it was so overwhelming.
We were, it was scary in all the right ways. We were just like, turn around, like in the dark. Was he in like a cave or something?
An abandoned mine or
something? Yeah, it was like some like nature area. It definitely was wonderful. Would recommend if you've never seen the show in general, season one will set a high bar.
Yes.
A very, very high bar. And then we watched season two when it came out. And I feel like we're a little more mixed about that one. Yeah. It was a little rushed. Story was a little kind of all over the place. And then, which is, I wanted to touch on this because I still think it's so funny. So season three came out. We were not living together at the time. So we had been texting about it. We've been texting about the episodes as they've been coming out. And I think you had something going on near where I was living for around the finale. So we watched like the last two or three episodes together. And our theory crafting went out of control. We had a piece of paper that I think the word gay was written on like 15 times because we developed this theory about like a gay child sex ring and none of it was true. We just like theory crafted and we're like, this person's a pervert. This person's a pervert. Like, and none of it was true.
Boys.
Yeah, basically. And then none of it was true, but just like this whole sheet of paper. And I don't think I took like a Snapchat when it occurred, but just this whole piece of paper with just the word gay all over
like
it.
Circled arrows. And yeah, it looked crazy.
It looked crazy from an outside perspective. It would look crazy. So our theory crafting went a little off the walls for that yeah. one. Yeah. So I think we learned, okay, we got to tone it down. We're in too deep.
I still feel like our theory was good and it would have made for a better
I think show. So too.
They should have hired us.
Yeah. I did like season 3, but I felt like it was a little underwhelming.
Agreed.
Is how I would put it. Definitely better than 2.
Yes.
Definitely not as good as 1, but like solid. Right. It was solid. You know, I enjoyed it. I liked the actors who were yes. in the roles, so that helped a lot. That brings us to season 4, which is the first season that is not written and directed by Nick Palazzo, I believe is his name.
Oh, okay.
So he actually is not the person who directed and wrote this season. He was replaced by, and I thought I wrote down her name, but I definitely did not. So let me just look that up real quick. So HBO hired someone else to come
Issa
in.
Issa Lopez?
Issa Lopez, thank you. I was like, I know I watched it on the credits like 80,000 times, so I should have it down. But yeah, so she came in, she both wrote and directed the show. I think there were some yep. additional writers, but yeah, so she came in, she's doing the season independently. And I read that she is probably going to be spearheading a 5th season. So HBO's ordered a 5th season and that she seems likely to be the person who's going to run that. So.
Yeah, so season 4 felt different than the other ones. And I can see that now with like the creative, like she was the showrunner, writer, and director for this one.
Right.
Issa Lopez. So I definitely got a different vibe. Mm-hmm. And I think it makes sense. I can see
a woman's perspective.
At the very end, I was like, yeah. Oh, this felt very feminist to me. And I liked, yeah, we'll get into that.
We will get into it. Yeah. I think I read something that she wanted to do an inverse season 1. So basically take a similar approach to season 1, but make the leads women instead of men and kind of reverse. So the murdered, are they not murdered women? They're murdered men is like the main plot.
Okay.
It's kind of, and then she took influences from other things. Like I got heavy The Thing vibes from like a research station out in Alaska. Like that whole aspect. She had a couple other things as well, but that was the main, like the one thing I read is that she mainly drew that from season 1. And I guess I was reading, there's a ton of references to season 1, but I haven't watched season 1 in so long that I didn't catch Ace. I caught one thing and that's it.
I don't know if I noticed. I mean, the pairing of the detectives definitely felt very reminiscent of them. And like the knowing that there was something in their past that like kind of caused a rift for them.
Right.
But like, yeah, I don't think I noticed any explicit references. But again, it's been years since we watched season 1.
I think we watched it in 2016, maybe?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
2015? It was definitely maybe somewhere around there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Almost 10 years.
Oh my gosh.
8 years? Could be 8. Could be less, but at least around that time.
Yeah.
It was before season 2 came out because we watched that episode by episode as it aired. I know that. Yes. I wonder when season 2 came out. I'm curious. It was probably, I know we definitely watched it during the summer because we would just binge watch in the basement.
Yep. Because it was so hot and that was the only place.
It's the only place that was cool.
It didn't have air conditioning.
No air conditioning. All right. Let me see. Okay. So it came out in 2014, June to August 2014. Oh my God. Or 2015. So at the very least. Yeah, so we launched it at the very least 2015.
Okay.
It could have been 2014, but it wouldn't have been any later than summer of 2015.
Okay. So
yeah, almost 10 years ago.
Wow.
Ugh. Yikes.
We're getting old.
Yeah, so just to give a general like overview of what this season is, the general plot is you've got rural Alaska. In the setting of the time of year when it basically is dark 24/7. There is a period, I think the dates might be a little different in real life as they are portrayed in the show, like the time when that occurs. I think it's a little earlier. than how they have it framed, but they probably wanted to do it around the holidays. So I'm like, whatever. I don't need everything to be scientifically correct. That's not what we're here for. That was also some complaints I saw about, like, this isn't scientifically correct. And I'm like, okay, sure. We'll talk about that. But basically you have a remote research station where a bunch of men, scientists who work there, go missing. They just disappear. And these detectives are brought in to investigate if they have just kind of gone, like, missing or what the deal is. The lead being Jodie Foster. She's the chief of police. I don't know what the title, I can't remember. Danvers is her name. Detective Danvers or Sergeant Danvers. I don't remember what. Again, that part is just gone out of my memory. And in addition to that, we have a previous police partner of hers, Navarro, who is hot-headed, to say the least, has been demoted due to things that we don't know about in the first season. But ultimately, they are brought together to work this case with some supernatural things going on. There's murder, most foul, and there's also Ferris Bueller. I was like, I was watching the opening scene and I immediately was like, how did they know? How did they know that, like, we would be watching this and that we love Ferris Bueller? And then I was like, that's all I need. I'm already in.
And it's not just that it was Ferris Bueller. It was the song that we always would play. And we love that scene where they're dancing in the street.
Yes.
Anytime I hear that song, I think of us at the cottage as kids over the summer, like watching that and like dancing to it. And as soon as I heard that song come on, I was like, I was watching it with my husband and we turned to each other and we're like, Ferris Bueller. And then it showed the clip where they're actually watching it.
I know. I just like that it also played periodically throughout the show as well. I thought that was funny. But yeah, that was like one of my first notes. So as I was like, this is funny. Ferris Bueller.
Yeah. Jodie Foster's character, Liz Danvers, hates that song.
She hates the Beatles. Yeah. Liz Danvers hates the Beatles. So I don't know if we want to talk about beginning to end, or if we want to just go into like maybe specific things like characters or whatnot. I don't know how we want to start, what makes sense. Anything maybe very, or is there anything really specific you want to talk about first? Or
there's nothing really specific I want to start with, but maybe I have a couple specific things I want to get to at some point. But should we just give like a brief plot overview of like the whole season? Because it's only 6 episodes. Do you want to like kind of just explain to the audience, remind them what the big plot points were?
Sure. Yeah, we can do that. So other than this disappearance, the other things we've been told is that there was a woman murdered, an indigenous woman who's murdered, stabbed 20 times, cut her cunt, her, that sounded like a word I did not mean to say, tongue. I cannot speak today. Anyone who listens to this knows that I can't talk in general, but it's particularly bad today. Has her tongue cut out. They don't find the tongue. It's not with her body. And the Navarro is the detective who was working that case. So we know that. We're set up with this plot line and that there may be a link between those because they find a severed tongue at this research station. So that sets that in motion where we've reestablished this link of two people who used to work like directly together and haven't, and they have some issues. trying to think what are some of the other like major plot points that would be good to know.
So what part of the background is that this small town sort of like was built up. Well, there was indigenous communities here before, but then like there's copper or some mineral that is discovered and they're mining. So there's this big, actually maybe it's silver because it's called Silver
Sky.
I think it's silver.
Oh, I don't know sense. If they, I don't know if they ever like really specifically specify what they're mining, but that it's a mining town.
Yeah. So there's this big mine that's obviously run by white people. And this one white lady I think we see is like the owner. And seems so there's a bunch of white people have come in to do mining and it's like causing damage. It's like whatever they're doing is like putting some kind of toxic stuff into the water so people can't drink their water. It comes out like brown and milky and disgusting. So obviously a lot of the people who live there before, many of whom are indigenous, are protesting and want the mine to like go because it's bad. And then the white people are like, but we're making so much money, so we don't care. And so there's this drama unfolding in the background.
Right. They also, I think they say at one point that like 50% of the population of the city works for the mines. So they're like, if the mines are gone, how are you going to survive? Like half the people who live here work for us. So there's like that aspect as well. There's the fact that it's a small town, which means they don't have the resources that a larger police department would have. So there is a detective who comes in from Anchorage who tries to take over the case at one point, who has a history with Liz. You know, they got a little history.
A little bit of history.
A little bit. Just a bit. The other thing is that... trying to think if there's like any other like general specific plots that's not like directly
the research station has been there for a while.
Yes.
And they, unlike like normal research stations where you'll have people like working a 6 month stint or something, you know, because it's pretty remote. The research is even like several miles outside of the town. So it's these single men, like they're all men, they don't have their families or anything with them. Mm-hmm. But they all stay there for like years at a time and never leave.
Yeah, that seemed interesting to me because like I know people who usually work like in Antarctica, like remote places like that, they only stay for a certain amount of time because one, it's incredibly isolating and people usually, I mean, humans in general are not meant to be isolated for that long of a period of time. It's not good for your general well-being. And I know that's generally why they don't send people to Antarctica because like you basically, there's nothing. There's not a lot going on. I did find that to be interesting where I was like, that feels weird.
Yeah.
You know, so that made me wonder, I'm like, how are they, then they go into it in the show. That's like one of the plot points is like, how are they funded? Like, where's the funding come from? Because it felt weird to me where being that I work for a university that receives government funding, I was like, I wonder, I have thoughts about that. And they were answered at a certain point. So that was something I thought about, the scientists' like interaction within the city and just in general, because it didn't seem like people really interacted with them. You know, there's a point where they are questioning some of the cleaning ladies who worked there, and they're like, they don't talk to us. Like, we don't, like, we're cleaning ladies. They don't acknowledge us kind of deal. Or someone who, like, dropped off food, he was like, yeah, they're all weird. They're weird guys. Let's see. It's heavily focused, I feel like, first and foremost, like in the beginning on the police detective investigation aspect. And then at a certain point, it kind of shifts to be more like about like, I don't know what the word I'm looking for, more like personal and more like focused on like interactions between characters and like relationships and like inner conflict is maybe the right word for that. So I thought that was a shift that I noticed at a certain point, that it felt like there was a shift a bit.
Yeah. So it turns out, like, you know, it's sort of like the end of the world or zombie apocalypse kinds of movies or shows where like the major issue obviously is the zombie or the bad thing, whatever is going on, that the apocalypse. But then you see that like the real danger to many people is the people themselves, you know, like being people and being shitty and causing harm to other people and taking advantage of people during difficult times. So you start to see that like, while there was this, you know, this disappearance and these murders in the past, and those are obviously a big issue, what really becomes like more relevant and serious to the main characters is these interpersonal dramas, and even that, their inner conflicts, and they seem to like kind of, those start to take center stage as you go into like the last few episodes of the series.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like that's a pretty good overview of just the general, like, what the background is of that. So I think I'd say something I think they did really well, and it was set up really well in the first episode, is the atmosphere. I think by having the show set at night at all times really like set a, like an atmospheric tone that like really worked for the show. I felt like it made things more like I don't know, suspenseful. Like I was like on edge a lot, where I'm like, when's something gonna jump out, or like, you know, like flashlight goes off and I'm like, no, I'm like, oh no, not the darkness. But I thought, yeah, I thought like the atmosphere was done really well. I thought that was different and made it for more like it felt very different from like the previous seasons in the show. The setting itself, I did like it being in Alaska, and especially like a rural town, I think was an interesting look at like one, the way things work in like small towns in general, but also just like conflicts between different groups of people. Like protesters versus the police, like there was a lot of conflict with that we saw, or like you know, indigenous people versus like white people, or the mine people, you know, come in and have set up things. Yeah, I think that probably what worked the best for me was like this environment and set I thought worked really well, and I thought was entertaining within that.
Yeah, and I also think not just for the entertainment value as well, but it this season really spoke to a lot of issues that are
Oh, that
incredibly
are real.
meant to
Yeah.
like the world today, colonialism, settler colonialism, economic imperialism, indigeneity, and white people needing to reckon with like the environmental and human costs of basically being like taking
Right.
over much of the world and obviously causing a lot of issues.
Yeah.
And then like the conflict of interracial families or mixed families, blended families in like race and also like parents. So the fact that Liz has a stepdaughter who is indigenous, because I think Liz at some point had married an indigenous man and she had, I think they had like a baby
Yeah, I think
together.
that was a step, like a or a half sibling.
Yeah.
I'm guessing like she married her daughter's or stepdaughter's dad, and
Yep.
then they
And they
had
had a kid
a
together.
son, and then it's later revealed that her husband and son died in what I assume is some sort of a car accident
Yes.
that they allude to. But then so she's taking over as her parent, you know,
Yeah.
as like a
And
step
so,
parent. Yeah.
and like the step parent, step daughter relationship is hard, I think, for anyone,
Yeah.
regardless of race. But then when you're also bringing in the fact that it's like this older white woman who doesn't seem to like fully get the like,
Yeah,
she has all this
right.
privilege as a white woman.
Yeah.
And then her indigenous, like 15, 16-year-old
Yeah.
stepdaughters, like there's so many things that like they just don't see eye to eye on. And that adds like another layer. And I appreciated that, especially with
Yeah.
conversations that I think a lot of families are now having. Like, we have lots of blended families, especially in the
Right.
US, and then like mixed race families as well. And I think that was good to show that it's not just all like the Instagram, like, oh, it's cute
Yeah.
and like it's easy to have a blended family. It's easy to be mixed race. Like I think it talked, this really spoke to like these real issues that families go through. And I appreciated that because I don't see that a lot in a lot of
Right.
TV shows.
I feel like they don't really show like a negative like relationship with that. 'Cause I thought it was really interesting to show like how her stepdaughter like at various points is trying to connect with her culture, like one that, you know, she clearly doesn't really have a connection to through her stepmother, and like her pushback against that. Like Liz was not happy with a lot of the times with her stepdaughter. And so that was interesting to see that like perspective of that. Yeah, she I'll tell you this now, because now that we're talking about Jodie Foster's character, she referred to her character as a quote Alaskan Karen,
Oh, yeah.
which I'm like, that's perfect. I'm like, I feel like that's a great way to describe her character, an Alaskan Karen. I don't, I mean, as with the show, I feel like they're always going to be complex characters that we're not really supposed to like. You know, you don't like see her and be like, wow, we'd be best friends. You know, she's like a hard ass, and like clearly she's like the chief of police in a small town where probably that is what she has to do to get respect in a lot of time, you know, has to be perceived as like, you know, uptight and yeah, and
Yeah.
whatnot.
But as far as like trying to earn respect in this town, she's
Oh,
also
she's
kind of
also
dug
not
herself a
doing.
hole because
Oh,
she
yeah.
really sleeps with everyone's
Every man,
husband,
yeah, every man in town, pretty
particularly married
much.
men.
Oh,
So she's
yeah.
making a lot of enemies.
Oh, of course. I know at one point the detective who she's sleeping with from Anchorage is like, you always were bad at talking to people before the accident, but you were even worse after. And I'm like, yeah, that seems That seems accurate. I get that. It was interesting because I feel like the scenes where you really saw her connect to people is when she talked to children. You could like, she like knew how to talk to children. Like there's one point where she like takes, they're questioning this woman and she's like, oh, well, let's go make mac and cheese. And I'll tell you about like, it felt like that was when I saw like a good side of her was when she was like connecting through children. And then otherwise you're just like, oh God, oof, oof.
Yeah.
Not it. Not it, Liz.
Not it, Jody.
Yeah, not it, Jody. But yeah, so I thought her character was definitely interesting. She's not perfect. She's also driving drunk at points, you know. She like runs her employees like ragged. Like Pete, was his name Pete? Paul? Pete Paul.
Something with a P.
It was definitely a P name.
Yeah, what
is it? It's like that? he had the name of one of our family members. I just don't remember which P is it.
Pete sounds right. Hold on.
You know, I wrote down some of the names of the characters. Hank was his.
Yeah, Peter. Peter Pryor.
Yep. Okay, Peter Pryor. I think she called him Pete a lot. Yeah. Yes. Hank was his dad. Yes. Also a police detective or a detective with the force as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a weird dynamic. So it's like his dad who's like been a seasoned cop who seems to have some kind of conflict with Liz Danvers.
Yes.
So Liz, who's a hard ass and like kind of aloof, but she somehow has like a close connection with the younger prior. So Peter,
right,
who's like his mid-20s, late
20s. Yeah, I'd say somewhere in his 20s. She refers to him as being below 30. So we know he's somewhere, I would assume, in his 20s. Yeah.
Yeah. But he so like does not get along with the dad, but gets along really well with the son. So that's an interesting dynamic that we see. And she's calling him for all hours of the day and
night.
Oh
my God. Yeah. Constantly. Everything. Pissing off his wife, rightfully so. She's like, are you kidding me? Like, you know? Yeah. He's like, we'll do anything for that. That was a weird relationship that I was like, I feel like that's, you know, not highly, like, if you're doing work, really shouldn't be working people like that. That's not good employee conduct, you know? Unfortunately, I kept being like, oh, I was like, just be asleep. Just pretend you're asleep. You didn't hear it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Would never work. But yeah, so she's like, I feel like with a lot of the characters, like none of the characters are really good people in a lot of ways. I feel like everybody has some sort of flaw or like issue with legal means. I mean, like, especially within the police force, which I know is accurate. Like there is a lot of corruption within police departments in general, not like specifically in Alaska. I can't speak for any police departments in Alaska, but like at one point she just gets heroin out of like the
evidence
room and is like, here you go, shoot up some heroin, show me where this cave is on a map. And I'm like, you're letting him smoke heroin in your house? Like, damn.
Yeah.
Bold.
And then you know, killing people and then covering it up. I'm like,
yeah.
It makes sense if you give someone so much unbridled power
and
you give them a badge and a gun, it's bound to that lots of people are going to be corrupt. This is not to say that all police are corrupt, but it's a system that basically allows for this to happen.
Yeah.
And you know, if you are like the good cop who then like finds out about it, you are either gonna have to be complicit and like help cover it up or turn a blind eye. Otherwise, you're going to be ostracized and or fired for like mysterious means, you know, so like in order to keep your job or to like keep you and your family safe, you kind of have to like now buy in and like be complicit in the crime. So I can see how that happens. And I think they did a good job of like portraying the complexity of it.
Yeah,
and like
for
like,
sure.
I think Peter's character is like this really honest, good person. He's young, he's green in the police force, but he's like really trying to, he really believes that like he can do something good for the community by being a police officer. But then you see all of these other characters who are corrupt in multiple ways. And I think they did a good job of like balancing that and showing that obviously not every cop is corrupt, but that it is a system that allows for corruption.
Right.
And this is certainly fairly common across the US.
Yeah. I think it was also interesting to see like different types of corruption, like how you can use that like power. You know, for instance, like one of the things that's covered up is a case that's determined to be a murder-suicide. that was a man beating his like young wife. And later it's shown that one of the officers, or Navarro, shot him in the head. It was actually, they killed him because they went to his, they had gone to his house like 10 times. I think it was 9 or 10 times, you know, for domestic violence, and she wouldn't report him. And they got there and it seemingly seemed like she was dead when they got there. And so retaliated, shot him, and they covered it up to make it look like he committed suicide. And which is found out as Pete is investigating that, looking into that, because he wants to understand, I think, the just understand what happened between the Liz and Navarro. And interesting, yeah, I think it's interesting to be like, sure, that is not okay to do, like, to abuse that power, to do that, even if it's like for a good reason, or, you know, like, you could take that as you will. Yeah.
Or it brings up the question of like, when morality or ethics diverges from law, which one is right? Like, sometimes there are laws that are not just and they're not moral, but then there are other things where like committing a crime might be justified in certain cases. So I think it's left up to the interpretation of the audience.
I think so too.
And I think the main crime that goes on in the story as well, that we'll get to in a little bit, but explaining the disappearance of the men from the research site, we start to see it's like sort of vigilante justice that seems justified and moral, even though clearly it's unlawful.
Yeah.
And I have some thoughts about how that relates to one of my favorite short stories. So when we get to that, I'm writing this down so that
we can pick it up. Yeah, can pick it back up. Yeah, sure. Yeah, we'll definitely get to the end at some point. We'll get there. I have a lot of thoughts about the finale. I thought another thing that they did pretty well throughout the show is like having this like supernatural spirituality kind of like, is something else going on like within nature. Because eventually at the end of the first episode, they end up finding the men frozen out like in the tundra. They're just out in a circle for no seeming reason. Their clothes are folded up nearby. You know, they are frozen somehow, although I feel like this is really unrealistic that one of them is alive. I was aghast. So let me, they're like, well, one, I mean, the other thing they show the police officers, they're like taking selfies with a thing. And she's like, what are you doing? Like, get it together. This is a professional like crime scene. And as they're trying to like unearth these guys, one of the men just breaks off this dude's arm. And then he wakes up. And I was like,
screaming.
I was like, oh my God. Horrifying.
I think it is possible.
It's incredibly rare.
I have heard of instances of like someone surviving several hours being frozen, but this was like a couple of days.
It was like two days. Yeah.
But yeah. Maybe not. I think there's a possibility, but it seems incredibly unlikely.
Yeah. I mean, he did eventually die from his wounds later.
Oh, that's right. Yep.
So like he did still die, but it was a bit like, I was like, timeline, I'm like, I'm just gonna ignore that. We're just gonna ignore that. That probably wouldn't happen. But so then you're left with this like ideas. It's like, okay, what happened to them? Like, there's like a symbol drawn on one of their heads. They're just frozen out in the, you know, out there, just a chunk of men, naked men, just hanging out in the tundra. And we set up in the like the opening shots of like this research station, we set up that like something happens where like a guy, like, she's awake, I think is what he says, right? Is that the line? Like, yep. She's awake. And then like the power goes out and essentially then they disappear. And it's as if they've left everything as it was. Like, there's beer, there's popcorn on a table. Like, everything is as if they just up and vanished. You know, there's no sign of like a struggle. There's no sign of blood or any like anything that would indicate that like something happened inside the research station. Except for this tongue. That's all we have.
And so they find all of the researchers except for one.
Except for one.
One has gone. So like after they find the missing men all like clumped together and frozen to death, and the one that's like barely hanging on to life, there's still one that's unaccounted for that they think perhaps murdered all of the other men somehow. And then he's on the run.
Yes. And the other thing we know is that he has the woman who was murdered a few years ago, he has the same jacket that she had, and later is determined that they were in a relationship. So then there gets that tied together. So then it's officially tied to this other woman's murder that happened, I think it was like 5 years prior. I think it was 5 years before this had occurred. So then you're left wondering, like, huh, so did he kill her and then kill the men, or like, did something happen with that? So he's then becomes the prime suspect, and they're out on a search looking for him. Goes missing. He's off. The other thing that along those veins is you get people having almost like visions or like auditory hallucinations. Like they're hearing things, they're seeing things. Navarro is seeing things. You've got even Danvers is hearing things too. Like I think she even hears she's awake, like in her sleep or something. So like multiple characters, including Navarro's sisters, also having these like some sort of like, I think she had been diagnosed with like schizophrenia and like bipolar, and like was having episodes where she was just like walking outside and like, you know, taking off her clothes outside and just wandering. So you get a lot of interesting like visions with that. There's also a woman who, Rose is her name. She's like an ex professor of some kind who just like went off grid to Alaska. And we're shown a man who's later shown to be her husband. Like he has died, and like she sees him leading her, like he leads her to their bodies. Like that's how they're discovered, as she finds their bodies. So they kind of delve into that. Like I think she even says a line at one point that like you shouldn't confuse mental illness with I can't remember what the exact wording was, but I thought that was an interesting take. Like there's a difference between these two things, like, and the way that the characters look at it, I think, is very varied, for sure.
Yeah. So, like, one of the themes in this whole season is, like, spirituality or a connection to a higher power, and have, like, the indigenous culture there, like, has connections with ancestors and spiritual unseen powers, mm-hmm. whereas all, like, the white people kind of laugh it off. Like Danvers always like makes fun of Navarro, yeah. who's talking about, you know, these unseen forces and her spirituality, and Danvers is like, oh, that's all like bullshit, whatever, yeah. and makes fun of it. So we kind of see how like different cosmologies, people, different people's worldviews are colliding, and people are interpreting like, yes, a hallucination or a vision or some kind of experience as either mental illness or hallucinations because not getting enough sleep, or it is like an actual spiritual connection. There is like a deceased relative that is calling to somebody, or there's some kind of message there. So different people are seeing it in different ways. And I think it's also kind of still left open to interpretation. It's ambiguous enough that the audience can, based on their own cultural worldview, can try to like, they could see it from one point or the other. And I like that they do that. So they're not alienating anyone in the audience, and it lets people like, because I think those kinds of things happen in real life, and some people call it religion, some people will call it a spiritual experience, other people will say that it's a hallucination, there's maybe a medical diagnosis for it, and there's a lot of things that we don't know as humans, because mm-hmm. you know, the subconscious and all of these other unforeseen things that are going on in our world, like a lot of people want to understand what it is, and we don't really know. So I liked that they kept it ambiguous like that, because that's how it is in real life. Like something that might be a religion for somebody might be just like nonsense to somebody else, because I think most religions to people who are not in them look kind of weird and just,
yeah,
you know. So I think I like that aspect, and I think it complicates the storyline in ways that I don't think any of the other seasons did. The other seasons all dealt with like some kind of occult thing, but like the occult practices was like some creepy satanic cult or something mm-hmm. that was like clearly bad. That was, you know, like, that was harmful and not considered legitimate. But in this one, you've got, I guess, the whether they're secular or religious, probably at least raised Christian white folks mm-hmm. who have like this particular worldview and don't believe in like the spirits calling to them. And then you've got the indigenous people who are very much in tune with spiritual forces and their deceased ancestors and like all of the other elements of nature, like having a life force, basically. Right. We don't see that in any of the other seasons. I think they actually delved into this other perspective of the world, which I think was good. And they didn't immediately, like, Jodie Foster's character writes it off as like bad or stupid or not real, but the writers and like the message from the show is not that this indigenous religion is somehow lesser or illegitimate. I appreciated that because I think it's high time that we acknowledge that like there are other worldviews that are legitimate besides just like white mainstream American views.
Yeah, I agree. I think it was kind of like, I did like that it wasn't necessarily defined as like a specific thing, especially like when we get to the ending. I feel like it also leaves a lot of that very open-ended for interpretation, which I thought was interesting. And like, yeah, different than, I know like the first season had like a little bit of like a sort of like a supernatural or like a spiritual element to it, but it didn't delve into it the same way. I thought it was
it was like satanic. Yeah. It was like, yeah, it was bad.
Yeah.
It wasn't like whatever that spiritual element was like a bad thing.
Right. I believe
Yeah.
If I'm remembering correctly. Yeah.
Whereas the spiritual elements in season four are not, at least I didn't take it as they were being portrayed as bad. I think it was just like, that is someone's worldview and let's just express it.
Yeah. Yeah. Trying to think if there's any like other like broad topics that would be good to cover. I'm looking at some of my notes.
I have a question about the symbol.
Okay.
The spiral symbol. So this is actually a question that my husband Corey asked me to bring up in this podcast.
Okay.
Because this is the one thing where he actually said he really enjoyed the season.
Okay.
The one thing he really was bothered by, that he didn't feel like the show explained what the spiral was for. Because I think one of the characters says, oh, this was like what people who were ice fishing or out on the ice would like draw the symbol and to say like it's thin ice, beware. Yeah. But I feel like there's supposed to be something more, because a lot of the disappeared men that they find later and like the woman who is murdered, they all have either like this marking on their head or like as a tattoo or something, and they see this in the ice. So we didn't get what the spiral really was like supposed to mean, and if it was an indigenous symbol or what was going on.
I wasn't entirely sure either. Like, I know, I thought you brought up a good point. Those, like, the fossils that they found in the ice made that symbol well. I think a lot of times when they're, like, assembling, I noticed, like, kind of when they were, like, assembling evidence, sometimes it also would be in, like, an odd circle, like, similar pattern. When she peels the orange, it makes the symbol. Like, it shows up a lot. And I was wondering if maybe, like, because I know that they had said, like, they would put the symbol to show where danger would be. And I know at the end, somebody draws a symbol onto that guy's head, basically. And that interpretation is different, but basically, like in form of nature, it's like a warning. I don't know. I interpret it as kind of like a warning sign, I would say, but I don't know if it has any like direct correlation. I didn't look up anything with that. Are you looking something up right now?
Yeah, I just looked it up. This is one of the callbacks to season one.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, let me show you this image real quick.
Yeah. Because I didn't look up a ton about it, but you make up a good point. Oh.
You see this?
Interesting. Okay.
So in season one, when they find like the weird, like the people who are murdered and like have the antlers on them, and, like, the weird cult stuff, they have that symbol on the. I forgot about that.
I did too. Yeah. Okay. So, symbol connected to a satanic cult. By the end of the season, they deduced that the symbol was not affiliated with Satanists. And I said that incredibly wrong. Spiral was connected to a religious pedophile ring owned by Tuttle. That's the company that owned the mines, was the Tuttle company.
Was it?
Yeah.
Oh.
It definitely said Tuttle.
Okay. That's one of the connections we made.
Interesting. Okay. So I wonder if that was more of like the symbol itself, the design was more of an Easter egg for season one and not necessarily drawing from any like, and I thought it maybe was some sort of like an indigenous symbol, like historic symbol that was like a sign of danger is kind of the way I saw it, but It makes okay, so if it's from season one, that kind of makes sense that they were like, oh, look at the symbol. You recognize this? But yeah, the Tuttle family, they talked about it was like Tuttle something was the company that was funding the research station. Was through like Tuttle Incorporated or something
Yep,
like
you're
that.
right. Yeah, because Peter Pryor figures that out because
Right.
he
Yeah,
does the thing.
he's following the trail of like where the funding for the station comes from. Interesting. Okay. So yeah, I don't think then maybe it's not supposed to, because that does feel weird that they kind of did never really like went anywhere with that symbol. Like it kind of doesn't get answered by the end of the show in a sense of like a
Yeah.
definitive thing.
But maybe it's supposed to, it's going to come back in like the next season or something. So
Maybe.
maybe it's one of those things that's left because it's not yet fully.
Understood. Yeah,
Yeah.
maybe.
But I, okay, now
Interesting.
knowing that it's
Okay.
linked to season one makes me appreciate and that it wasn't just random. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So that makes a little
Those
more sense.
writers.
Yeah. Okay. I see that. Yeah, because I really was like trying to figure out because the symbol kept coming up like multiple times an episode. It would show up. Sometimes it'd be like very noticeable. Sometimes it would not be. It'd be like kind of like hidden. Like with the fossils and the ice. I was like, is that the symbol? I was like, oh no, it's danger. But yeah, no, I think that was interesting. I feel like that was the main like reoccurring symbol that came up a lot. Like they kept finding it everywhere. Like the one what's her name? I'm trying to remember what the name of the girl who died was, the
The
initial
sister.
case. Not the
Oh,
sister.
oh.
It was like the initial woman who died, who was
Yes, I
murdered
know.
like without the tongue. I didn't write down her name. It's Julia was her sister's name. I know that.
Let me see.
I can't remember. Katie or
Annie.
Annie.
Annie
Annie
K.
K. Okay, Annie K. I know her friend had said that she was having dreams about the symbol, and then when she got it tattooed, the dreams stopped. So that was like, I don't know, something
Interesting.
that she dreamed about was that symbol.
Okay, so maybe Annie K was receiving spiritual guidance from the ancestors or some other
Yeah.
spiritual force that was warning her that the research site and the miners are all like funded by Tuttle or whatever. That like there
Yeah,
are
maybe.
these evil white people are basically trying to destroy their town and their people, like by
Right.
putting toxins in the water and like all of these other things, destroying the
Yeah.
environment and in general just like colonizing.
Right.
So maybe she was getting that warning because she's Annie K, before she was murdered, she's one of the lead protesters against the mine.
Right.
So I
Yeah.
think like she was sort of like this prophet figure for her
Right.
town to like try to protect the town from the white people, the miners, the everybody else who's trying to corrupt it.
Right.
So yes, I could see that maybe like this linking back to season one, and it's like these evil forces that she's being warned about because she's in tune with this because of the way that she sees the world and she's like aware of
Right.
the spirits. Because not everybody else like gets these visions or these dreams because they're maybe not as spiritually gifted or they're just not in tune with that. And like, yeah. So I think
Right.
that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that makes sense too. That seems very reasonable. Let me see. So, do we want to go to like the end game type of discussion now? So finale episode, basically what we find out is that they find Clark, right? They find this dude. He has been hiding in ice caves. The research station had a secret like laboratory underneath that was in the ice caves, which is where they were doing like they were taking cores of ice and trying to find like microorganisms to help with medical related things. That part felt a little unclear to me. It wasn't, which I don't think it necessarily needed to be that developed, but
They were looking for
yeah.
something that was supposed to like help regenerate life and like would be able to cure cancer and a lot of
Yeah.
things like that.
Like an ancient type of DNA, they wanted to use like ancient DNA to help with current problems. I know a big thing, it just is just from an outside, like just knowing about climate change and some of the research done, there's a big concern about by having permafrost melting, it'll release like pathogens and bacteria that haven't existed, and we won't be able to treat it because we don't have like that type of like our bodies are not accumulated to those diseases that existed, you know, thousands of years ago and whatever. So I know that's a, I was like, that's an interesting take that they're like, we're going to use it to help people when it's like, I've also heard like, there's this possibility that it could be like the opposite effect where we get things that we don't have, like our ancestors probably like had a resistance to, but we don't as a current, you know, population. But basically, so find these ice titles, ice caves, they're trying to find where Annie Kay died because they determined she died in an ice cave. They get in there. They find Clark. They find that the instrument that she was stabbed with was in this laboratory. Track them down. And it turns out that she found out that the mining company was basically paying, like they funded the research station. They were changing their numbers. They were taking the money, making it look like it was less pollution than it really was. And they actually wanted more pollution because they wanted the permafrost to melt faster so they could get more data. And that science is a bit weird, and I'm not going to get into it because I don't really think that's really important for the plot. So, like, we don't really need to have like extremely scientific facts or like correct scientific stuff. Because I don't know, they're taking ice cores, but technically permafrost isn't even ice. It's more soil. So like, that's a whole different thing. Soil core is different than an ice core, whatever, you know, not important. But they find out that because of that, Annie Kay found out about it. She started damaging like research in this ice cave. Scientists apparently, I guess, show up and then just stab her a bunch of times and kill her.
Yeah, because she was destroying the ice cores. And yes. So they are like, naturally, their response is
kill her.
Our evidence or our research, therefore we are going to kill you, because that's how a normal, rational person handles conflict.
Yeah, but my thought is, again, if we're talking about the impacts of isolation, if these men are isolated and their whole lives are their work, I can see somebody, like, that was my interpretation. I'm like, if somebody is isolated, their whole lives are their work. Like, this is what they've been working on. This is like the cure for humanity. Then I could very easily see somebody seeing their work destroyed and snap. Like, the way I looked at it. Cause I was like, the way that they're emphasizing like how important this work is it's like, it seems unrealistic. Like, oh no, you've seen too much, time to die. But I was like, the isolation could do that, you know? I could see that.
You're right. Yeah, now that I hear you explain it, you're right. I do think that like, isolation does really disturbing things to our psyche. So I think you're right that is, in those kinds of conditions, someone might snap, yes.
Yeah. It still felt a little weird. I was like, okay, sure. I'll look at it that way. It's fine. So then she dies. They cover it up. It turns out Pete's dad, Hank, I don't know what dirt they had on him, but he was working for the mines and helped move the body for them. So I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. They never really actually say what he did to like, do these like be blackmailed into doing these things. Like he was told if he did that he would become chief of police, but then he wasn't. So then, you know, because we see a meeting between him and the woman who's in charge of the mines. I can't remember what her name is, but basically she's like, get rid of this the guy who's doing heroin, we need him gone. And that sets up a whole interesting thing. But anyway, so they move the body, they set it up. On the other side, we have the fact that Hank is, you know, basically follows Liz to her house where she's got a guy smoking heroin in her bathroom. That, like, that whole setup I felt was a bit weird. I was like, I don't think she would take him to her house, you know, to smoke heroin that she stole from evidence. That, I was like, that's a lot. That's a lot going on.
But where else is she going to take him, I guess?
That's true. I guess there's got to be some public restroom or something, you know, like somewhere. He could smoke outside. It's a rural town. It's dark. Find a random spot, have him smoke out. I don't know. That was a bit weird. But anyway, Hank just shows up and then shoots Otto, right? Was his name Otto?
Yep.
Shoots Otto in the head, or not in the head. He shoots him in the shoulder, then he shoots him in the head. Then his son shows up because he's hanging out in a shack in her backyard. He's got kicked out of his house because his wife's pissed at him. Right, you know. And then basically we have a showdown where he's pointing a gun at his dad. His dad's pointing a gun at Liz. It's a triangle. Liz doesn't have a gun. And ultimately, Pete shoots his dad in the head.
Yeah.
That was pretty disturbing. Just the whole setup. I thought the tension was done well, but it was like, oh, so he chose... the way you could look at it is he chose Liz over his dad. Although his dad... His
mommy figure.
Yeah, his mommy Liz, figure.
The overbearing mommy figure over his dad. Yeah.
I mean, he has mommy issues because his mom left them, you know?
Yeah.
It all checks out. But anyway, so he's left to clean up his dead dad and this heroin addict, scientist Otto. And so he's got to deal with that. They're at this research station and it's a blizzard. Of course, the blizzard's here. So they're trapped. They're trapped with the scientist. Navarro at some point lets him out. He just goes and dies outside, you know, basically freezes to death. And then they are stranded out there. And then that's when they start having more of this internal conflict and spirituality or hallucinations, however it's interpreted. And eventually they deal with that. Research station, you know, opens. It's bright out. She fell in a pool of ice and didn't get hypothermia and die, even though they had no heat. That, I was like, that's a little hard to believe. She's fallen into ice. And meanwhile, we have this whole talk later about how Pete fell into the water ice skating and, like, had to go to the hospital and, like, was a huge deal. Meanwhile, she's just, like, in a blanket by a fire, like, keep breathing. And I'm like, and then she's perfectly fine, like, another, like, 2 hours later. And I was like, okay, that's a little extreme. I get that they wanted to be dramatic, you know. She's trying to seize her son under the ice and then falls in, you know, her dead son. Trying to make it dramatic. But it was a little hard to believe the series of events to that. But they find the hatch. They're like, I don't know, something about what she says. She's like, the hatch. And then they get some handprints belonging to a woman that we've seen.
With, like, three fingers, right? She has two missing fingers.
Yes. Yeah. So then they take a little trip to one of the woman's house, and she's been staying with another woman because I think it was a boyfriend or a husband had been beating her. This was, like, a early plot point from, like, I think the first episode.
Yeah.
So she was staying with this other woman. And they tell a nice story. Tell a story.
Yes. And it's, like... So the women that are there, so, like, the younger woman who's missing fingers and then the other older woman, they are cleaning women. Like, they have worked as custodians who kind of, like, go around to, I think, the mine, to all of these other, like, larger...
Police department.
Police department. They go to, like, all of the main companies and, like, whatever buildings throughout the town, and they clean. And so one of the places they go to is the research station. They're one of the few people from the town who actually is allowed to, like, come into the research station and clean. So they tell a story, and they frame it as, like, well, we've got a story to tell you. And it's all so to, like, think about the optics of this, like, the shot of this scene. So it's these two cleaning ladies at, like, the one end of a kitchen table, and then it's Navarro and Danvers the other. So it's all of these women, and you start to, like, see that, like, okay, the cops are like, okay, we see what's going on. This is, like, a story in quotations where they're not admitting to anything. They're like, this is just, you know, it's just a story. It's just fiction. This is what we think happened to the disappeared men. And it's clear that the custodians are behind, like, they explain how they, in fact, were the ones who forced the men, the research men, out of their station and, like, into the darkness in the middle of the night.
Right. So I think it's just interesting that they never show them actively harming these research men. They basically round them up, put them in a truck, take them out into the wilderness, tell them to strip, and then I think the one woman says something like, left him to see what she would do with them. Like, them, her being up to interpretation. It could be nature, it could be, like, a spiritualness, or, you know, anything, really. And they all died. And nature, you know. Got him.
I took the she to be the spirit of Annie Kay, mm-hmm. who was like trying to get revenge, but I also think it could be Mother Nature mm-hmm. or
right.
something. But yeah, so the woman said, listen, these men, they weren't that far away from their research site. So if she, whatever this force is, doesn't want to kill them,
right. they'll
they
come
can
back.
Put their clothes back yeah. on and they can walk. I mean, they'll be really cold, but they can survive.
Right.
So we're not, it's out of our hands. We did not cause their deaths.
Right.
We left it open to whatever spiritual force that is female to do mm-hmm. what it yeah. will do with them.
Yes.
They just kind of like facilitated it and made it possible for this nebulous, whoever this she is,
yeah.
to make her decision about how she's going right. to punish or deal with the men, if at all.
Right. Because you have this earlier in the episode, you have this scene where Navarro like hears a woman calling to her, and you can interpret that. Like, I thought that's, I don't know, at least the way I saw it was implying it was the same entity, but it chose to not like take her. Like, yeah. it basically was like gave her this vision and like gave her her name, and then that was it. Mm-hmm. Kind of the same thing with Danvers, I feel like also kind of had sort of like was called and was like spared. So it seemed to like imply that like some people were called to and others like, but not everyone was like chosen, mm-hmm. I guess is maybe the way to see that.
Yeah. And okay, this is where I want to bring up one of my favorite okay. short stories. Have you ever read, Alyssa, the short story called A Jury of Her Peers?
I don't know if I have or not.
Okay, I highly recommend it to all the listeners as well. It's, I think,
it considered
like an American classic. It was written, it was published in 1917 by Susan Glaspell.
Okay.
I think I read it for a college English course. And okay. basically the plot is where, so it's actually based on a real murder case that okay. happened in Des Moines, Iowa in the early 20th century, I think. Because
okay.
Glaspell, I think, was a reporter
okay.
before this. And so it's, she based this on an actual crime that she was a crime reporter on before. So okay. there's a woman whose husband, she like calls the police because her husband has died mysteriously.
Okay.
They don't exact. And so like the police are questioning and figuring out, and then they're digging into the background, which is very similar to several of the women characters in True Detective season 4, where the man is like aggressive and beating and like, it's domestic violence, essentially.
Right.
So we saw this with the girl who has 3 fingers at the very right. beginning of the season. Her boyfriend or partner has been beating her and hurting her, and Navarro like beats him up because of that. We right. saw the in the flashbacks, the person that Navarro and Danvers had killed and made it look like a suicide, murder suicide.
Right.
He obviously had been beating his wife.
Right.
So it's this idea of like women taking vigilante justice, basically taking justice right. into their own hands. So in this short story, A Jury of Her Peers, the detectives are like investigating and it seems suspicious. They think that the wife actually killed her husband and they made it look like he like died by suicide or okay. an accident or something. I think he hanged himself is what it's, if I remember correctly. And so then they have these women who are like, I don't remember, it's been a while since I read it. So it's either like okay. an actual jury or it's just a group of women who come in to investigate. Mm-hmm. And all of these women are aware of the abuse that this recent widow mm-hmm. has been suffering at the hands of her deceased husband. And they realize that she, in fact, killed her husband, but mm-hmm. it was because it was like in self-defense. This was the only right. way she could protect herself, because at this time, in the early 20th century in America, a woman couldn't just like go off on her own and like divorce. Right. And like, there was no real viable, I think, option for her to like, and like, nobody recognized domestic abuse as abuse. Like,
no.
you know, assault of your wife was not considered right. assault because she was like your property and like, right. whatever, and it was consent because she's married to you. So it's, you know,
right.
So there was really no other option for her to like protect herself other than to kill her husband. And so it turns out at the end, all of these women are in cahoots and they know what happened, but they're like, we think she's justified. And so they mm-hmm. basically they acquit her and they basically say like, yep, it was a suicide mm-hmm. and it's a sad thing, but now, you know, like, case closed, basically. And I felt like that was very much how the True Detective season 4 yeah. was, where all of these women come out, because at the end scene when they're telling the story, all of these other cleaning women come out. There's like 20 or 30 women in the house, and they're all like, and they come, they put the hands like on the shoulder of the two women that are sitting there telling the story, and the detectives are like, okay, I see what's going on here. They're all like admitting that they're part of this, and if we, you know, we would have to arrest all of these women, and we actually think they're justified in what they're doing. So again, morality and law are like divergent. So we have to pick which one are they going to be loyal to? Morality, doing the right thing, or following the law? And they choose to be moral, even though it goes against the law.
Right.
All of these women again. So these women are sort of juries of their peers, of the like the detectives become a jury of the peers of these women who force the research men out and stuff. So I like this because it's very feminist. It's like women supporting women and choosing to side with justice to protect women when the legal system will not protect women. Because, you know, the fact that there was all of these calls against that man with the murder-suicide case, like 9 times there was domestic dispute calls and they did not arrest him. The law could not protect this woman from the abuse she suffered at the hands of her husband.
Right.
And all of these other women who are being abused by men in the town, like they can't, the law cannot protect them. So they have to protect themselves, and it's women protecting each other, which I thought was, I really liked that. That was probably my favorite aspect of the show, was that it was women supporting women and being in cahoots with each other, and it was going against the law, but for moral reasons. At least I thought it was moral. I saw it as justified.
So I have a question for you. You brought up an interesting point, and I was going to bring this up, and that's a good time to do it. Do you think Navarro was involved? Do you think she was in on it?
On because, the, what the cleaning ladies did?
Yes.
I hadn't thought about that.
Why I read a theory, because we never learn where the tongue comes from. The tongue just appears. So I was reading something. I didn't think of this when I was watching the show, but somebody thought maybe perhaps she put the tongue there so she could be involved on the case and like make sure, like keep, you know, keep them safe, right? Like, you know, because she was the one who went to question the cleaning ladies. Like she was the one dealing with that. You know, it's very possible because that case was very close to her. Maybe they told her once they found out that the scientist killed them, and like maybe she was involved, like an inside person. And that's why she kind of seemingly disappears at the end, because she is in a way like very involved in that. So that was just something that I was like, what are your thoughts on that? If like, do you think it, she is involved or maybe not? Like, because that's also just could just be a story. Like, because when she asked him about the tongue, it seemed, I don't know. I was like, when I thought about it, I was like, it kind of seemed like maybe they were like, oh, we didn't have anything to do with that. Like, that wasn't us. Wink.
Yes. You know what? I hadn't thought about that. But now that you bring that up, and the women admitting essentially by through their story explaining that they like were complicit and that they did all these things, but they said, yeah, the tongue wasn't us. You think it would have to be someone in law enforcement or someone who, because Hank had originally cut out the tongue, right?
Yeah.
And then where was he keeping the tongue?
Yeah. That's a great, I don't know.
But like, you know, if he, Navarro, if someone in the police force was in on it, it would have to have been Navarro.
Yeah.
And she was like so dead set on trying to connect Annie Kay's case to this. And she's like, the tongue proves it. So yes, I think that makes sense, because it's not Danvers. I don't believe Danvers.
No, I don't think she was involved in any way.
And I think it's one of the women. I don't think it's a man in the story. So, and then I think it has to be someone who was in the police force or would have been able to like have access to or figure out where this tongue was. I don't think it was Peter, because I don't think he, like, that would have been, he was very much by the book before, so I don't think he would have done anything like that. And so maybe it was Navarro, and she was complicit in that, and she was trying to protect these women because she knew she had, as, you know, an authority figure, had the power to protect them if something went south in this situation.
Because we see her, like, very clearly, like, she's got an issue with men in general. And like beats the, like arrests the guy who was abusing that one woman, whose like hand footprint we find on the the vault. You see like very clearly takes her side immediately, but she's also in general like seems to take woman's side just in general, is very much more concerned with their well-being than men, and which makes sense. But the other thing I was reading about that I'm not so sure about this one, but I thought I'd bring it up with you as well. So when we see the Clark, the scientist, like the video recorded of him, like confessing to what like the mining company had done and how they had been like falsifying the numbers of pollution and stuff. Someone I was looking online brought up a point that it looks like he is much more put together in that video than when we see him, when they find him, like that like final day before he dies, as if Navarro found him before and like made him record that, because there were, I don't know, people were like, it looked like he was much more like his shirt was cleaner, like he looked more clean cut, as if like, you remember when she finds her at the research station?
Yep.
Like people were like speculating maybe she found him that day, and like because they knew he was like someone was in the vault, remember they like tried to open it. So maybe like she went back and then that's when she found her there. Like she had done that kind of deal.
Oh, okay.
The theory. Yeah. That they, she had, had that, that recorded pre ahead of time before they came back later.
Okay. I was thinking that maybe Navarro just tried to clean him up so it didn't look like he was under duress.
See, that's kind of, I'm more leaning towards that than the fact that she found him ahead of time. But I thought it was an interesting theory that I was like, that seems like it's possible, but I feel like, yeah, she probably allowed him to clean himself up before he confessed and then go die outside.
But either way, yeah, I do think, like, Navarro was, like, very smart in that situation. And she held, she was, like, that's the one time she had restraint and, like, not. Because, like, Danvers walks out of the room and was like, I'm not going to. And
she's like, are you going to stop me? Yeah.
And because you think that Navarro's going to do, like, what they did to that murder-suicide guy.
Right. And shoot
this
him.
Guy and make it look like a mysterious death or a suicide or something. Mm-hmm. But she decides, she's like, no, we need him because we need his confession. Otherwise, we can't prove what happened.
Anything. Yeah.
Like getting justice for Annie Kay and getting the world to know what actually happened is more important than me taking my anger out on this guy. And ultimately, he's going to get what he deserves. He's going to die, but we need to get something from him. And I thought that was like, for someone who's a hothead,
right,
he was like very clear-headed in that moment and made a very smart decision, and I actually was not expecting that.
Yeah, I wasn't either. I was surprised when I was like, oh, it's like she didn't kill him, but also she recorded, had him record a video confessing to everything before she like released him to do what he wanted to do. But so that's like a theory that I had seen that I was like, oh, that's very interesting, that I probably wouldn't have thought of that. Because that was like the one thing I was wondering was like, where, who put the tongue there? Like, where did it come from? Who had her tongue? Because it's insinuated that Hank cut her tongue out. Because the scientist is like, we didn't do that. So it had to have come, and it also, someone had to have stored it for what, 5 years without it decomposing. So it must have been in like a freezer or something, you know? And they never really touched back on it other than, there was like a weird spot where the tongue was that was almost like mineral or like a glass. I don't know if you remember, she's like looking under the table and she sees like a weird substance, like where the tongue was. And we never really revisit that at all. But yeah, that was like one of my big questions. I was like, I was trying to like look into that. And then I read that theory that like Navarro planted it so she could be involved in the case, because she knew if they found the tongue that she'd be more willing to get, be able to work on the case in general.
I also, oh, so one thing that I forgot about, Annie Kay, her character, in those flashbacks, we see that she's a midwife.
Oh yeah, right.
Which is like, she is literally protecting and like being there to like care for women and usher in
new life
into this world or this realm. And there's something about, she's kind of like a mother figure for so many people in their like most vulnerable time. And I don't, there's something there about, I think maybe this is like one of those links between her, her deceased, or her spirit after she dies, and Mother Nature, and how
right,
she was this mother figure for so many people and like a protector. The she's back, she's awake, or we let her deal with the men how she wants to, links again Annie Kay's spirit to this larger like earth goddess spirit or something.
Right.
But I think they could be one and the same, or you know, it's like everything's connected.
Yeah.
And I Yeah, so I think like they could have chosen, the writers could have had her have, you know, any kind of profession, but I think midwife is particularly important because she's there to protect the women, and none of them, like, fathers are ever present. And I don't know if that's just like a cultural thing, or like they've all been abandoned, or were not, like, they weren't with the father, like they weren't partners. They just, maybe this was like a one night stand kind of thing, but they still want to have the baby. And so it's all these women who are constantly taking care of each other because no one else will take care of the women.
For sure. Well, I also know just like in real life, like indigenous women are murdered at a much higher rate than like other women, and
It's
are
alarming.
especially like in, like, I know in Alaska and Canada, it's like a real problem that is often not touched on in like general news and whatnot. But I know I've like read some things about that, so I feel like they did a pretty good job of like touching on elements of that, not necessarily like that being the direct focus, but I did think it was interesting to get like some like look into like that type of community and like environment that would like lead to that.
Yeah, I'm trying to look up statistics because I think it's like a
It's like it's
crazy.
crazy. Yeah, it's like a crazy number.
I think it's, I want to say it's like, and this is not just even in Alaska and Canada, like this is in the lower 48 as well. The rate at which murdered or Indigenous women are murdered or go missing is like, I don't know exactly how many more times than even like the next racial group. And then, like, compared to white women, it's like insane. And like looking at the percentage or the proportion of people in the US who are indigenous compared to white women, and seeing like it's very disturbing how proportionally how many more indigenous women go missing or are murdered. And then they're not even, many of these cases aren't even investigated, or if they are, it's like cursory and perfunctory. And there is no actual
Or
resolution.
as we see kind of in this, like people keep secrets in a small town. Like people will cover for people. People will not talk if they know things. Like they don't trust police. They don't, you know, there's a lot of, like I think facts that were interesting. I have us one stat that says that specifically Indigenous women are 3 times more likely to suffer from domestic abuse. And that in 2019, 4% of homicide victims were identified as Indigenous females specifically. I don't know if that's worldwide or if that's where that is. I'm trying to see if there's any other specific stats. Let's see.
Okay, I found something. I don't know. I can't verify that this site is accurate, but it says 85% of Native American women report experiencing violence, including sexual assault, domestic violence, and rape over the course of their lifetime. And we know that these kinds of assaults are also underreported. So
Oh
that's
yeah.
insane. Because I
So
think
I
for the av like across the average, or like for American women, regardless of race, isn't it like 1/3 of women will
I
experience
think
something like
so.
that?
Something like that, yeah.
So 85% for
Is
Indigenous women, that's incredibly high.
I do have a stat. It's from our most trusted website, Wikipedia, so take it with a grain of salt. From 2001 to 2015, the homicide rate for Indigenous women in Canada specifically was 6 times as high as homicide rate for other women. So, yeah. So that's for Canada specifically, but yeah.
Okay, on nativewomenswilderness.org, it says the murder rate of Indigenous women is 3 times higher than for Anglo-American women.
Yeah, so
And
it's a new, like it's specifically like that group is it's way higher than any other like any other group of women in general.
And okay, this is according to the CDC, murder is the third leading cause of death for Indigenous women.
That's
My
crazy.
God, that's
Murder, yeah,
insane.
that's
That's
should
insane.
not happen.
And the fact that it continues to happen, because it's not like nobody's investigating, or nobody seems to care. Like the people in authority obviously aren't doing enough to prevent it or look into it. It continues to happen. It's so alarming. And yet, when, I mean, this is like the converse side of the missing white woman syndrome where, you know, like with the Gabby Petito case,
right,
a couple weeks
where
ago,
you get like national,
national
coverage.
But it's like, and it, Gabby Petito should have had that national coverage, but
oh,
so
for sure.
every other missing or murdered woman, regardless of race, but white women get are privileged even in death to have justice for them when this happens, even though they're much less likely to be murdered statistically.
Right.
But it's just like, it's very clear what our media and our law enforcement like cares about. It's very clear that
prioritize,
lives and even their deaths are considered more valuable than, especially more than Indigenous women, but more than Black women, Latina women, like any, basically any woman that's not white. And it's,
I mean, it's, we've talked about this just in general, because you and I listen to a lot of true crime podcasts. There was a very long period of time where pretty much every true crime podcast was focused on a white woman's murder. For a long time, like many, many years. That was like, there were some that are focused on other other groups, but it was like a predominantly large amount of the investigations were about like murdered white women, like young white women.
I would say I listen to a lot of true crime. I would say even like the ones that I think are doing a good job in like seeking out stories of women of color and like as victims or survivors, like they still, there's not as much information on those cases because they're not as reported. So a lot of the stories that I do hear about are still about white women because those are the ones that are reported on. And it's like, it's just, it's disturbing to see how women are, women, especially Indigenous women, are just like discarded as if they don't matter. And the fact that this is happening and it's like an invisible crime because so many people don't even realize that it's happening. And maybe something about the invisibility here is like symbolized through the invisible forces of nature that are like calling to the women in this season of True Detective. Like highlighting, because like all of these invisible crimes that are happening, the fact that people are refusing to see Indigenous women as like full people and worth our attention. And then, so like the cosmic justice is crimes that are happening then to the men who are perpetrating violence against these women. The what happens to them is sort of invisible. And I think maybe that's like a symbol why we don't understand. We never really know what happened to the men. We know that they were left out there and someone or some female force was going to deal with them, but it's like this invisible force. I think that's meant to highlight and represent the invisible nature of the violence perpetrated against particularly Indigenous women.
And
so
I thought
the writers did a good job with like highlighting these themes through like this kind of like symbolism.
And I believe the writer and director of the show is Latina. She might be Mexican as well. I was reading a little bit about her. I went off the, let me see. She
was born in Mexico.
So I think, because I read like a little bit of her about talking to it, that she, that she, like things that she had inspiration from, and some of that. So yeah, so I think probably having, I think I did notice that some of the things that kind of felt different comparatively to other seasons, I feel like potentially having like a woman being the head writer and director of the show had an influence on the way the story was written, which I think was a different perspective that was like highlighting important things and important perspectives that we don't always get with these types of shows. Because I feel like a lot of the time when you have stories that are like true crime that are, you know, people being murdered, often the people being murdered are women. Like generally, that's just like how it is. You know, so it feels like it was interesting to have many of the people, the main story be focused on men and as opposed to women. Which I thought was an interesting perspective to have, for sure.
It was refreshing.
So I want to talk about some critical reception and audience reception and some things like that. But what are your just like general feelings of the season overall? Like, how would you compare it to other seasons? Like, what are your overall thoughts before we get into some other people's thoughts?
Good question. I don't think any season will ever compare to season one. Season one, and I think it's also the novelty of season one because of like it being this whole new idea was season one, and also like McConaughey, like you just can't, like
you can't,
and Woody Harrelson, like they were just such a good combination. Like I love season one, and I think that's always going to be my top. I think I would put season four as my second best one. I mean, I enjoyed season three. Season two is a little weird, but I do love Rachel McAdams. So yes. I'm like conflicted with that one. But I do think I would have to like rewatch all the seasons to like review what I thought about each of them. But right now I think season four is like my second favorite. And I think for all of the reasons we mentioned with like this feminist message and the message of indigeneity, I mean, I'm a professor of African history and women's history. And so I deal with these themes a lot. And I've seen a lot of ways that women and women of color and indigenous people are like ignored or discarded. And so this is something that's important to my own work and research. So I really gravitated towards that. And like anytime a woman is in charge here as the writer, director, and showrunner, like clearly we're getting this woman's perspective. And as a woman, I can relate to that. And I appreciated that.
Yeah.
I like Hannah. Don't love Jodie Foster, but I don't have this like irrational complete aversion to her. But I think her character was necessary. We needed the Alaskan Karen to show that other side.
Yeah.
Navarro was great. She was entertaining. I loved how she was like just didn't care what other people thought, and she just did whatever she wanted to do. So I appreciated all of the feminism in the show, and so that's why I think it's my second favorite.
Yeah. I kind of feel about the same way. If I had to like put them in a lineup, season one is like one of my favorite seasons of any show ever, just like in general, not even related to True Detective. Like I'm like, it's so well done. I think you're right. It's the novelty of it. Like it was kind of like a first of its kind type of TV show. Like no one had really done this type of style before. And like a more of like a mini series focused on like a set, like character study, as well as like an overarching plot like that. Like, yeah, the two leads had such great chemistry together. So I don't think anything's going to top that. And I did like season three, although I feel like it was not exactly the story that I wanted, like the way that it ended up going. But it was still well done. Season two is, it's fine. It's a fine season. But I think four, I probably right now, like, again, I haven't watched any of the seasons since we watched them. So I don't know if I could like accurately like say this is definitively it. But as we stand right now, like I really enjoyed season four. Like, I don't think it was perfect. I think the ending felt a little bit like off, maybe like, it didn't like stick the landing for me in some ways. Like the way the story went in like the last two episodes, I feel like maybe it was a little, could have been written a little tighter, like just the general story itself. But I really liked the environment. I loved the atmosphere. Having it in the dark felt like really unique, gave it like a very specific vibe that I thought worked really well. But yeah, so let's talk about some critical response, because I'd love to discuss some of these things with you. I went online, and after I finished the season, I went, how many people are going to hate this season? That was my first thought. Here are some things that I found. I think the first thing I'm going to do is I went to IMDb, and I looked at all of the seasons, and I looked at what the lowest rated episode of every season was, because I was curious, like, every season has, you know, like a bad episode, I put in quotes. So season one, the lowest rated episode is an 8.8. Two, it's a 7.3. Three, it's a 7.8. And season four, lowest rated episode is a 5.4.
Which episode?
The finale.
Huh.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought that was interesting. So then I went and I looked at every single episode of season four. Every single episode is rated lower than the lowest rated episode of season two. So every single episode has a rating on IMDb below a 7.3. But interesting, if we go to look at other sites, Rotten Tomatoes had it listed as a 92% for the season critically, 8.5 out of 10. Metacritic had an 81 out of 100. Critically, it had like critically well received. Critics really liked it. Rolling Stone said it was the best finale of True Detective ever, which I don't really agree with that, but that's fine. Besides the point, people were critically really liked it. However, when I go online and I'm looking up some responses. I went into people review again in IMDb and I found many, many one-star reviews. I went to Reddit as well, which is always a mistake for a male, you know, the male perspective is very dominant on Reddit. I just was curious about what people were saying. So here's some things that I found. Somebody said this is the feminist agenda. If DEI was a show, they said, this is the worst show I've ever seen in my life, which I'm like, you've never seen Pretty Little Liars. You were like, you don't know bad TV. Like, if you're saying, I saw a lot of like, this is trash. These writers should have, like, this feels like a Hallmark movie. And I was like, what, like, what are you talking about, people? Worst writing. What was some other things that I found something else. I also found that the original creator of the show, Nick Palazzo, apparently has been very critical of this season, even though he was technically an executive producer on this season. He was critical of it. He didn't like it himself, I guess. Not a fan. But yeah, so I have to wonder, and I, you know, just a theory throwing it out there. If every single season, every single episode of this season is lower rated than season two, which is generally considered like a not good season. Like, I remember when we were watching it, people didn't like it. People weren't like super into it. One, because it followed season one, but also it just was a little bit of a messy show. Like, the season was a bit messy. The character dynamics were messy. I have to wonder if this is getting the Captain Marvel treatment. Do you remember when, so Captain Marvel was the Brie Larson led Marvel movie where it got like absolutely review bombed on like Rotten Tomatoes and IMDb. People were like giving it one star reviews, yet it was the, like, made $1 billion in the box office. Like, it was a huge success, like, money wise, but like critically, like, audience got like absolutely like review bombed, like, before it even had come out. Like, there's a whole thing about that. Basically, people were unhappy, you know? I have to wonder if this show, this season, specifically focusing on women, like, the main characters are women. I saw, oh, here's my other favorite quote. I saw somebody say, I don't understand why they wrote these male roles and then casted women in them. And I was like,
what do they mean by male role? A police officer? A person in
like,
authority?
Like, they basically, the insinuating that they gave women the roles intended for men, as if the main writer, the woman who wrote these roles, wrote them for men. But then, you know, diversity, we got to give them to women.
What an asinine thing
I know.
To say.
So, and I was not surprised to go on Reddit to see that, but it was like overwhelmingly negative. And people like, we're like, this is the worst show I've ever watched. This is the worst season. Like, I can't believe they, it was like children writing, like, very much like tons of hate. And I was like, I remember being on Reddit when season two came out and people were like upset, but nobody was saying they hated the show. Nobody was throwing that level of hatred out there. So I have a feeling the people, like, don't get me wrong, I am sure there are people who did not like aspects of the season, and I can totally understand, like, not liking certain elements of the story or, like, plot, and that's fine, but I really feel like people who have nothing but hate or, like, are saying it's, like, the worst show they've ever watched are maybe calling themselves out a little bit there. Maybe you're giving away your biases there. Just a thought I had.
Yeah, so the fact that IMDb is like the one critical outlet that rated it really low while the other ones rated it really high tells me that IMDb is run by incels. And we already know that Reddit is populated primarily by incels who have no life.
Yeah, so IMDb, that's like anyone can do a review. So that's like audience, like, I think there was 11,000 ratings for like one of the episodes. So that's like anyone can do ratings and not like having to be like a critical review or like a company person. Yeah.
So the same racist, sexist incels living in the basements of their mothers, these old 45-year-old guys with no life, that are the ones who are rating on IMDb and putting their stuff on Reddit. I don't, and like, I really don't care about their opinion. I'm not surprised at all. Like,
oh, no, I'm not either.
Women leads and it focused on an indigenous community And one of the leads was not only a woman, but a woman of color. Of course, the people who are racist and sexist and want to ban books and want DEI to be banned and things like that, and don't believe that, or, you know, think critical race theory is like the greatest threat, you know, against America right now.
Yeah.
Those people, I'm not surprised that they are, you know, outraged by this. And it brings me joy. It brings me joy that they're so upset, because, you know,
it's so
hard to be a privileged white man. And like, it's so hard. It brings me joy.
Yeah, because I was like, I want to go online, because I was like, I wonder what like the subreddit, like television, our television, they had threads, or like I went on like one for HBO. I went on one for True Detective specifically. And it was like every single one. And I like would occasionally find a comment being like, do I feel like everyone here is overreacting? Like, I liked the show. Like, I thought it was good. But I couldn't believe the comment about somebody saying male written characters replaced by a woman, like in the male role. And I'm like, that just makes no sense. Like, how does that make sense that a woman wrote male leads and then put in women into those male written roles? Because women, but why? Like, I feel like sometimes people have this idea that like women have to be written a specific way. And they don't get any grace if they're not perfect. Like none of these women in the show are like by any means perfect, or like, you know, arguably are not good people, depending on the way that you look at it, the perspective of that. And I'm like, I don't understand why male roles get a pass. Like, tons of shows have shitty male leads and are not good people and like have flaws, and that's fine. But if it's women, then it's suddenly like, this is like bad. And like, certainly, yeah, there are like things that I think are like, for instance, Hannah and I have talked about this. There's like a scene in the Avengers where they have like every single woman in one shot walking together, like, look at us, female empowerment. And so sometimes it's over the top and it's like, all right, like, you're just doing this to be like, look at us, we love feminism, we're on your side, you know, and it feels very out of place. But I'm like, and then when you get just normal people, it's like suddenly not possible. It's not possible for there to be a woman police officer, you know, who likes sleeping with men. Oh my God, can you believe it? Cheaters? They're not real. I don't know. Just like parts of that I just don't get. It just doesn't make any, I'm like, couldn't you be bothered by something else? Like, your time could be better spent being less angry about that and worrying about other things that don't impact your life in any way.
Yeah. I also just like, the people who are upset by this are those who have so much privilege that they don't even realize that this is something that men, and I would say also like white people, depending on the situation, white people regardless of gender, are given grace to be mediocre, or and fail upward.
Of course.
And this idea of like, so this is something I talk about with like my students in my classes, related to African history, and this idea of like Black excellence, and like Black people are not given the grace to just like be regular, and they have to be high achieving, otherwise they're somehow not doing enough. But a white person can be mediocre and like can be appreciated and like not forced to have to like live up to some like unrealistic goal. Like, why do you always have to be the best of the best?
Right.
Like, people aren't required to do that. And I think looking at gender as well, like men typically are not expected to do that, or women, if they come into a certain position, have to be like better than every man in the company just to like prove that she's worthy of being there. But a man can just like kind of slack off, and he's given the grace to just be that, because he doesn't have to be exceptional. So I think when we have women, and then one of the leads is a woman of color, it's this idea of like, we expect them, if they're going to be in this kind of role, being like the leads of the show, but also them being like the lead detectives in the universe of the show, that they need to be exceptional, and they're not allowed to have flaws. They're not allowed to, they have to be, it's this unrealistic exceptionalism that we put on minorities, whether that's racial or ethnic minorities or gender minorities. Like, and it's just like the fact that people can't even reflect on like their own privilege and biases and realize that like they're asking something unrealistic of women or people of color, but not of white men. You're like, someone needs to look in the mirror and just like think about why there's this double standard in their thinking.
Right. Because when you like, if you look at the, like the creator, you know, the, I can't remember what her name was. I'm blanking. Who wrote the show? Yes. So her saying that it kind of like in inverse season one, why are the two leads given such grace and they're also terrible people too? Yeah. Like they are terrible. They're both terrible, you know, detectives. Like, why do they get that grace? But these women don't, you know, it's kind of the same thing that I'm like, if that I was like, I don't really get like the amount of hatred that I was seeing, like just, you know, especially looking at like the 1-star reviews that it was like, I'm like, really? 1 star? This is the, yeah, that I couldn't wrap my head around. I'm like, them saying this is the worst thing they've ever seen. I'm like, you've not seen bad stuff. Like, you've not lived. Like, this is nowhere near what I would consider to be a bad, like, bad season. Certainly, you could look at it and, like, not love things they do. But, like, the worst, like, season you've ever seen is truly a stretch.
Yes.
Yeah. But yeah, so that was, yeah, the main thing I wanted to cover just was some of the things critically and audience-wise that I saw. Because this show ended, I think it was 2 weeks ago, I think is when the finale aired. So somewhat recently.
Yep.
Yeah. But yeah, so they are supposed to be working on a season 5, I believe, is scheduled. And I believe the director and creator is supposed to be working on that as well. I believe there were some things about the original creator of the show. I don't want to say anything specific because I just remember reading that like he might be like hard to work with or like, I don't know, like difficult. But I don't exactly remember. I want to know if I, I'm just curious. Let's see. I remember reading something about it. And like potentially that's why he didn't come back.
Okay.
I don't remember. Let's see. I don't know. It doesn't say anything on his Wikipedia page. So I don't want to speculate on things that I don't have a definitive knowledge of. I wonder if I just like look it up. His name up and see what comes up on the news side of things. Basically all the news articles about him saying that it's stupid. Some of the sloppiest writing I've ever watched. So I guess he didn't like it.
I just saw a website that like the headline is Nick Palazzo has always sucked.
Okay. I don't think he's had any like sexual assault or sexual harassment allegations. I think I've just read that he could be difficult to work with as like a creator. Okay. But I don't. Yeah. He apparently created a space on his Instagram solely for trolling, support, infighting around True Detective. And the absolute moral degeneracy and misogyny of anyone who did not think it was good. Sarcasm. Yeah. Oh,
interesting.
Yeah. Right.
Well, I liked the show.
Yeah, I did too. I enjoyed it. Yeah, no, when I went online and I was like, everyone's like, it's horrible, it's terrible. I'm like, I enjoyed it. I was entertained. I was engaged throughout it. Yeah. Anyway, so apparently a lot of men didn't like it. Probably women too, I'm sure. It's not exclusive to men not liking the show. Anyone could not like or like a show. You know, Hannah and I are watching the live action Avatar and we're not thrilled with it, but we also don't hate it. I saw like so there's like kids that are cast in that. Apparently a lot of the children are getting like hate on their social media. And I'm like, really? You're harassing children because you don't like the show that they're in? Like,
sad.
You need to chill out. Yeah. People got to chill out. Like, calm down. It's fine. You're allowed to not like things, but you also don't have to be like rude and evil about it. Like, you know, make your own podcast. Then you can talk about how much you hate it. I'd love to hear it. Yeah. I don't know. Is there anything else we want to talk about before we wrap up?
My question, or the one thing that maybe like I felt unsettled by at the end, was Navarro's decision to walk out and basically heed the call from this whatever spiritual mm-hmm. force is calling to her. Because like I think it like suggests that she dies by suicide, or she just goes out and dies in the elements. And
yeah,
you see that she comes back in spiritual form to like visit Danvers, and Danvers mm-hmm. like sees her, and it's like they're so the way that I understood it was Navarro comes to this realization that life is a continuum, and I don't know if her indigenous culture believes in reincarnation or whatever,
right.
But it seems like she's like, I know there's something after this life, and I'd rather like go to that because this world is so messed up because
humans.
And she's like, I'm ready to go on to like the next phase. And so for me, from my worldview, I read it as that was suicide and like kind of problematic. And I was like, I don't feel comfortable with the show, like basically saying suicide is an okay out for.
Yeah.
But then I was like, maybe that's because I'm looking at it from my perspective. And I don't know in her indigenous culture if there's like, it's not seen as that. And it's like, there are many lives to come. And she's still very much able to like visit with her human friends after she dies. And like, she just goes into this other spiritual form, I guess. And like, it's maybe not seen as bad. Because a lot of, we see there's allusions to other indigenous people who have died in the same manner. And maybe it's not like, maybe it's not the same as like suicide or the way that like white Christian America sees
right.
suicide. So I don't know. I was a little unsettled by that because I was like, I hope nobody watches us and thinks like my life is hard.
Yeah.
Suicide is the right answer. But then I'm like, I don't know because I don't know enough about that
so-
culture.
Something I noticed, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the episode where her sister commits suicide or, you know, walks out into the ocean, they had a warning that there were depictions of suicide in the episode, but we didn't get that with this one, I believe.
Oh, I didn't even pick up on that.
Okay, because I did notice that because I was thinking about it, and I was like, oh, is she, because that was my thought as well when I saw her walking out, I was like, oh, is she, you know, from committing suicide, but I was like, oh, but the last episode we didn't get, like, we got a warning, like they I saw that. So then when like her sister walked out, I was like, oh, I think that's what this warning is,
okay.
Because I was waiting for it, but yeah, we didn't get that in this one. So I like the way that I saw it is like it's possible that she might not be dead, like that might actually be her.
Oh.
At that house. That's the way I looked at it. Like, that's not actually, like, I'm sure that's another thing that's open to interpretation,
yeah.
But I thought maybe she was like, I need to get away. I'm going to go to wherever this, like, random cabin situation or house is that Danvers is also at a certain point. Because I was like, that would be weird to me to show her sister doing something very similar and having a suicide warning, but then not having that for her. If she's seemingly doing the same type of thing. That's at least the way that I saw it. Because I agree that it would be, that is unsettling to like have that view of like somebody, a main character, seemingly commit suicide from like our way of thinking of that.
Yeah. Okay. I honestly didn't even pick up on that. Like the, whatever the warnings at the beginning of the episode.
I always read those because then I'm like waiting for whatever they deem like a caution. I'm like, I'm preparing myself because I think we got a caution for Pete shooting his dad in the head because they said like something to some type of violence, disturbing violence or something is what they said. And we got a warning for like self-harm and something, suicide or something was the warning we got with her sister, Julia.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because of like the fact that I'm a historian or that I love true crime that like I feel like unfazed by just about anything. Like I've heard about horrible things that
right,
humans do to each other that like I don't feel like I need those warnings. But
right.
I also like so like for me, I think I ignore them because I'm like nothing is new under the sun. For me, like I as a historian, I just know about all these wild things that people have done to each other that I'm like yes, it's horrible, and I like know that, but I'm like,
you don't really need the warning to be prepared for what is to come. I appreciate that they do that because there are people, you know, who are sensitive to certain things. Absolutely. But I'm more for me, I'm just curious. I'm just like, ooh, what's going to happen? Yeah. Like, when is it going to happen? So usually when I see things like that, I'm like intrigued about like what is going to happen to cause them to want to put this warning in place. Yeah.
Well, that makes sense. Oh, and I never picked up on that with the last episode not having that warning. So I think you're right. I think perhaps, or maybe it is meant to be ambiguous. Like we're not, we don't know, but because something that also made me think that she had died was because someone asked about Navarro and like, oh yeah, she left or something. Yeah. So it's very possible that Navarro just like went off. She left Alaska. She's going wherever she needs to go. Like, I don't know if she goes back to Boston. Like,
right. Or somewhere else. What. Yeah.
And so maybe she does come back to visit Liz Danvers occasionally. And she just like, doesn't, you know, talk to anybody else in the town. That's a possibility.
Yeah.
I like that version better.
Yeah, I like that was the where I was like, I feel like it's maybe ambiguous, like exactly what happened to her. But I feel like if they were insinuating she like walked into nature and like, you know, was like reincarnated or committed suicide, I feel like it would have been framed differently based on the way they had done it a couple episodes before that. It just is the way that I saw it and the lack of warning. I was like, I feel like if they were insinuating that, they would have prepared something to be like, hey, everyone, watch out.
When, so that last scene, that, or one of the last scenes, when we see Navarro like walking out onto the ice, like in the mist or something.
Yeah.
Did she take off her clothes or was she clothed?
She was clothed and it also was like sunny and she didn't look like cold, I guess, is the way that I'd phrase that. Because I feel like when her with the one with her sister, like she took off her clothes and like very much like was cold and was headed for water.
Yeah.
So I feel like it was like also sunny. Like the sun was out.
Right.
was like, I don't know, like dawn of a new life, like rebirth type of because like her name that she was given, her like indigenous name was like Rise of the Sun or something, like was something like that. I can't remember the exact wording, but it was something like that. So I thought maybe that was more like symbolism with her new life, kind of like, because, you know, she was like, I feel like I'm the guy in the hatch. Like I'm just holding the hatch shut, trying to like survive.
Hmm.
I don't know. So maybe it was more of like a symbolism of like, she's let this, you know, she can let this case go. She can move on to something else kind of deal.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense then, because I do think they, all of the people who like went off and were taken by the spiritual force or whatever, they all undressed and left their clothes.
Right.
And the fact that we didn't get that, I think you're right. You picked up on all those hints that she does leave Alaska and she kind of like leaves everyone without a proper goodbye. Like she leaves the toothbrush for the guy that she was like hooking up with and stuff. I think that they're saying that she's leaving, but she's not dying.
Right.
Yes. Okay. I think you're right.
Okay. I was like, I feel better about that. Like if it's giving that interpretation and I feel like maybe that's why people didn't like the ending of the show. Cause maybe that's also the way people interpret it is that she committed suicide and then, you know.
Okay. Well now, like that was like one of the bigger things that kind of unsettled me. So I actually like the show even more now that I realized.
But you're like, oh, it's fine. Yeah. And when you mentioned that, I was like, I went back in my head and I was like, yeah, that I don't believe the warning was there. So I feel like that would be there if that was the case, if they wanted to portray that as that way.
Yeah.
But yeah. Overall, nice. I liked it. I enjoyed it. I had a good time with it. I was properly unsettled. I did gasp when a man's arm broke off and then he turned out to be alive. That was very unsettling.
Yeah. I really loved the feminist agenda.
Yeah. Vigilante justice.
Yes. Good old vigilante justice.
Good old vigilante justice. I don't have anything else that I think I want to cover.
Me either.
Nice. Well, thank you for joining me for our 2-hour-ish discussion of the show.
Always probably, a pleasure.
Hannah's probably like waiting by the phone.
What are they doing?
Waiting to come. But she knew we were going to talk for a while, of course. Yeah. Of course. But yeah, thanks for joining me. Tara has a tutoring business that would you like to plug that here if anyone needs
Sure.
tutoring?
Yeah. So my business is called Terastottle Tutoring. So it's Tarastotle, Terastottle, and then tutoring. And if you just type terastottletutoring.com, you'll find my website. I do editing and writing tutoring and other kinds of services related to writing. I love writing. My undergrad major was in English. I have a PhD. I help a lot of graduate students with writing projects, particularly like dissertations or other long form writing. If you're interested in that, yeah, you can check out my website. Thanks for that. And I really enjoyed being on the show once again. So thank you.
Yeah, of course. I'm glad we could make this work. I'm glad Hannah allowed me to host an episode without her. Because I was like, I was thinking about it and I was like, I really want to talk to Terry about True Detective. I want to do the podcast so we can just talk. And I was like, Hannah's not going to want to do it. So I'm like, let me, I was like, I hesitated for like a little bit and I was like, all right, I'm going to send the text, be like, are you okay if I do this without you? And she was like, yeah, it's fine. And then I told her, I'm like, that gives you free rein. If you want to cover something that I have no interest in and you have somebody you want to talk to, like bring them on. Cause these episodes, the research breaks are much more like free form. Yeah. Informal. Like they're not really like, we don't have like a structure or anything. We're doing bare bones research, clearly, as I'm looking things up as we're going. But yeah, so this is research break. And if you want to tell us about your opinion on this season, because I would like to hear if anyone out there has watched it. I like don't know anyone who watches the show in real life. So, but if anyone out there has watched it, has any thoughts, would like to, you know, share your perspective on that, would love to hear it. We have our Gmail, r3podcasts@gmail.com. We also have an Instagram, Research Rank Repeat. We also have a Letterbox, not really relevant to a television show, but if you like movies, we got a Letterbox account on there. But yeah, so thank you again for joining, Tara. Pleasure to talk to you. We will continue our conversation as soon as this episode is done, pretty much. Co-host Hannah is going to join us for a chat, not podcast related, but she will be here in spirit soon.
She's awake.
She's awake. She is awake. We should, when she joins, can we just say she's awake?
Yeah.
And see what she says. She's not going to be pleased.
No.
I know that. Well, yeah, thank you for joining us. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next episode. Bye.
Later.
We would like to thank Joseph McDade for our intro music. He provides free music available for all kinds of creative use. The song that we used is called Sunrise Expedition, and you can find it and his other music on his website, josephmcdade.com. If you would like to reach us, you can email us at r3podcasts@gmail.com. That's r3, podcasts@gmail.com. Or you can find us on Instagram by searching Research Rank Repeat.